Rashi points out that this sedra starts in an unusual manner. Usually the sedras are set aside from the previous sedra with a paragraph. And this has a parsha stuma, basically doesn't start with a paragraph, it's like run on from the last sedra. And it comes to hint to us, that's called a parsha stuma, closed parsha, that the eyes of the Jewish people were closed because of the bondage that began after Yaakov Avinu died. The question that everybody asks is, that's not true. The bondage didn't start until the last of the Shvatim died, which was basically a generation later. And therefore, why hint in the parasha where Yaakov dies, but not necessarily all the other brothers, that their eyes already were closed from the Shibud? The Chasam Sofer says that over here, Shibud does not mean the bondage, but it means a point before that, okay, meaning the following. The Egyptians began to feel that the Jews owed them something, and the Jews felt they owe the Egyptians something. Why? Because the Egyptians supported them, let them live in their land like parasites, forgetting that it was Yosef who enabled them to feed anybody, forgetting also that when Yaakov was alive, the famine stopped, so they didn't have to support the Jewish people. But when Yaakov died, the famine came back, and then, in fact, the Jews were supported by the Egyptians. So they were meshubed, they felt beholden. Not that the bondage started, but there already was a feeling that they weren't independent. They were dependent on the Egyptians, and the Egyptians felt that the Jews owed them something. They resented that. I want to say a little bit differently. You see that immediately after Yaakov died, they lost their independent status in Egypt. How do I know that? Because Yosef didn't just go to Paro and say, I'm leaving for a few days because I have to bury my father. He didn't even go to Paro directly himself. He had to send a shliach, an agent, a messenger to Paro. He couldn't get a personal audience. Here's Yosef, the second in command in Egypt. And no longer does he have free access to Paro. No longer can he do whatever he wants. But he has to beg Paro to let him leave Egypt to go to bury his father. And the Medrashim say that originally Paro was not interested in letting him do it. But Yosef brought some very strong, convincing arguments to make Paro agree. What do we see from that? That the Jews in Mitzrayim already lost their independence. They were dependent on the Egyptians and subjugated to them, not necessarily subjugated with bondage, but subjugated in the fact that they weren't free to do whatever they want. Even Yosef wasn't free to do whatever he wanted. And basically, that has very close connection to Asar B'Teves today. Today is Asar B'Teves. What happened on Asar B'Teves? The siege of Yerushalayim began. That eventually led to the destruction of the first temple. Really, there are... Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm not...
Okay, I have to ask you to hold the questions till the end. I'll leave time for questions. Okay. Otherwise, people lose their train of thought.
Okay.
So this is the Asar B'Teves. There are really four aspects of galus, of exile. The first is that we lose our independence. We become subjugated to the nations of the world. We're no longer independent. The second is that we are in danger and we are vulnerable to the attacks of the nations of the world. The third is we lose the Shechina, the Kedusha, The Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, and the Shechina goes into exile. And lastly, we are scattered amongst the nations of the world, leave Eretz Yisrael and are scattered. The truth is that each of these stages of Golus are represented by one of the four fast days. Asara B'Teves, we've lost our independence. There's a siege, you can't come and go as you please. The Goyim are in control of our movement. Then we are no longer independent. Then comes Shivasa B'Tammuz, when the walls of the city were breached and the Goyim came in. We no longer were protected, we were vulnerable to harm of the nations of the world. And then comes Tisha B'Av, where the temple was destroyed and we lose our holiness, lose our connection to God to a certain degree. And then Tzom Gedalia, where up until Tzom Gedalia, we still were in Eretz Israel after the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. And the Babylonians appointed Gedalia to be a vassal of them to govern us in Eretz Israel. Once Gedalia was killed, most people fled Eretz Israel and became scattered amongst the nations of the world. So those are the four aspects of Golus. It's interesting that the only one that happens immediately, and therefore the fast of the Asara B'Teves, there are opinions that say that if it could fall on Shabbos, it never falls on Shabbos according to our calendar. But if it could, we'd have to fast on Shabbos just like Yom Kippur. Because it says in the Navi, Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh, that Asara B'Teves is on the midst of this day. It has to be on this day. Just like Yom Kippur, it says the same thing. Why? Because all the other ones, the result didn't happen on that day specifically. It just was precipitated by that day or culminated on that day. For instance, on Shivasa B'Tammuz, when the Goyim breached the walls of Yerushalayim, we weren't necessarily harmed by them at that point. It's just that at that point, they had the ability to harm us. So the harm came later, whatever. It didn't come as soon as the walls were breached, or that day necessarily. But it precipitated our being able to be harmed later. The same thing with Tisha B'Av. The temple was destroyed on the 9th of Av, but the truth is that it wasn't totally destroyed till the next day on the 10th. It only began to be burnt towards evening on the 9th. And not only that, but the major part of the temple, which is the spiritual part, was already destroyed way before that. Way before the destruction of the physical plant, the Shechina already left. 40 years before the temple was destroyed, the Shechina left there. So it wasn't that day that specifically caused the result. And the same thing with Gedalia. When Gedalia was killed, everybody didn't leave that day of Eretz Israel. It just precipitated that over the next months, whatever, they left. So therefore, it's not so significant the day specifically that these things happen, even though the Chatchila we fast on that day. But if the day falls on Shabbos, so you push it to a different day. But Asara B'Teves, the damage was caused on that day. As soon as they made the siege, we lost our independence. The day was significant. Now, why is that the first stage of bondage when we lose our independence? And if that's the case, then that was the first stage of the bondage in Egypt too. Before we were oppressed, before they put us to work, before they started killing us or whatever, before all the other things happened, we lost our independence to the point where Yosef, who was the second in command in Egypt, no longer could come to Paro personally and no longer could just do whatever he wanted. He was subjugated to Paro's whims. Why? So there's a Kliyoker in the end of Vayigash and again in the beginning of Vayichi who says the following. I'm going to read you what he says. Kol Pasuk Zeh says, Vayeshev Yisrael be'eretz Goshen, the Jews settled in Goshen, and they took hold of the land. So the Kliyoker says the following. Kol Pasuk Zeh be'oshmas Yisrael humedaber. This sentence is a condemnation of the Jewish people. God decreed that they should be strangers in a land not theirs. Meaning they're going to have to go into exile, but be strangers in a strange land. b'makom shenigzar aleihem gelus, and they chose to be citizens and to be settled in a place where they were only supposed to feel like strangers. Shemitchila lo yordu lishtakei hasham. In the beginning, their intention wasn't to settle in Mitzrayim, just to be there temporarily. Ela lagur, to be there temporarily until the famine would go away. The achshav chazru midivrayim, and here now they regretted that, they recanted on that. The kol kach nishtaku shama, and they became so settled in Egypt over the years, ad shelo rotzu lotzeis Mitzrayim, until they didn't want to leave. God had to take them out with a strong hand. Not only did he have to force the Egyptians to let us go, he had to push us to leave. The Olsen Shalom Ratzel, and those who didn't, even after that, didn't want to leave. They were happy in Mitzrayim. Mesu Begimel Yemei Afela. They are the ones who died in the 3 days of darkness. So the Jewish people began by settling in Mitzrayim. That was the beginning of the negative part of Golus. And in the beginning of Vayechi, the Kliyoker continues this idea, and he says the following: Ulafisha me hayadua sheyimshach nezek gadol min yediyas hakeitz. He says Yaakov Avinu wanted to tell us when Mashiach was going to come, but he was prevented from doing it. So he explains why was he prevented? Because it could come great damage from knowing when Mashiach is going to come. Why? Ki ha-doros ha-kodmim Hayodim shahagula loti abimehem, because if you know Mashiach is coming in 1,000 years, then all the generations till then who know Mashiach is not going to come, lo yidushu as panei Hashem, they won't look to be redeemed. Levake shalagula, they won't daven for the gula, because they'll figure, well, it's going to come in 1,000 years. What do we have to look for it? The al hatmura v'chein pirushu akeda, and therefore the sefer akeda says. That's why God left the time for Mashiach unknown. In every generation, we're hoping that maybe he'll come in our generation. And they're always looking forward to being redeemed and to getting out of exile. The S. David Malcolm. The Yu Mechakim Lakeitz Yeshua Sotami. They'll constantly be seeking and hoping that maybe Mashiach will come now. Even though we know that when we don't know when Mashiach is coming, we have that same problem. Many people, she'ena kates noda, mikol ravim heim b'amei ha'aretz, ha'misyashvim b'artos ha'amin. There are many ignorant Jews who have settled in the land of our enemies, the land of Goyish lands, right, in non-Jewish lands, outside of Eretz Israel, ubonim lahem batim sfunim v'chashuvim v'shalavonim, and they build themselves palaces. Nice, big houses made of stone. Right, binyan kiyum, houses that can last for hundreds of years. They're not so interested in Mashiach to come. They're pretty settled in America or in England or whatever. And they don't therefore really ask for Mashiach to come and the Gula to come with a full heart because they're very comfortable where they are. The Alkena Kodesh Baruch Hu Menicham Shama, and that's why God leaves them there and doesn't bring the Gula because they're very comfortable there. Okay, it goes without saying that this is true in our time, as much as it was in the Kliyoker's time, who lived in the 1700s. And the Sfas Emes adds a dimension to that. So it comes out that when Jews get too comfortable in Golis and they feel that they're settled there, right, so then Mida Keneged Mida Kodesh Baruch Hu takes away our independence. We're supposed to be independent. And we're supposed to want to create a society of our own, with our own values and standards, not subjugated to the cultural subjugation of the nations of the world with their values and their standards. And when we don't use that independence to create that unique Jewish environment, which is best created in Eretz Israel, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes away our independence. And he makes us subservient to the nations of the world, not only culturally, but physically too. When we choose to be subservient culturally and to feel comfortable amongst the nations of the world and not look to be in Eretz Israel with our own society, where we can function freely to do what our standards and values and our lifestyle is, then the Rabbanu Shlom makes us, what's it called, not free and not independent amongst nations of the world, and we begin to feel how subjugated we are to them culturally when we see how subjugated we are physically. The Sfas Emes adds a dimension to this. And he says, when it says that their eyes were closed to the bondage, it doesn't mean that because there was terrible work they had to do that they closed their eyes and made them suffer. It means they got comfortable and they didn't realize they're in Golus. They got so comfortable their eyes were closed to the fact that there's a subjugation over here. They felt like free people in their own land, which many Jews feel all over the world. And because of that, that's when the Tzara started. In order to show them that this is not what I want. I don't want you to assimilate in the nations of the world. And this is the beginning of that assimilation. God already makes us feel that we are subjugated to them, that they feel we owe them something. We are they treat us like strangers. They treat us like parasites in order that we shouldn't be able to assimilate amongst them. And this we explained when it says that Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai, Esav Sonei Es Yaakov, from Sinai and on, right? There's a halacha. There's a part of the way of the world. This is part of built-in divine decree that Esav Sonei Es Yaakov. Esav hates Yaakov. That doesn't mean that every non-Jew hates Jews the way we understand hatred, but the concept of hatred is not necessarily somebody hates your guts. Hatred is the opposite of love. Love means a bond. Ava means a bond, a connection. The word Ava in numerical value in Gematria is Echad, one. When there's an affinity, a oneness, that's Ava. Sina is the opposite. When there is a distance, there's a separation. I'll prove it to you. That doesn't mean necessarily what we call hatred. It leads to that, but it doesn't necessarily mean that. How so? It says, Vayehav Yaakov es Rachel mi Leah. Yaakov loved Rachel more than Leah. That implies that he loved Leah and he loved Rachel. He just loved Rachel more. Next pasuk says, Vayar Hashem ki snua Leah. God saw that Leah was hated, and therefore he opened her womb and he gave her children and not Rachel. Now, it just said that Yaakov loved Rachel and Leah. Just he loved Rachel more. So why does it say God saw that Leah was hated? He didn't hate her. If he hated her, how can you live with her? How can you have children with her? You can't live with a woman that you hate. So Elamai, Sina does not mean he hated her. But there was a little bit of a separation. If he could create a bond with Rachel that was 100%, if his bond with Leah was only 99%, that 1% of distance is called Sina. Sina just means a distance. Therefore, God put into this world a safety valve. That whenever the Jews don't maintain their independence in the world and their feeling of being an insulated nation, we are an Am Levadad Yishkom. We're supposed to be a nation that dwells apart. We're not supposed to assimilate to the nations of the world. We're supposed to create our own values, standards, environment, society, the ideals in Eretz Yisrael. Separate, but not isolated. Insulated, but not isolated. That's how we're supposed to deal with the world. And the place for us to have that insulation is Eretz Yisrael. It's a holy land. We're supposed to create a holy society in Eretz Yisrael, and from there interact with the nations of the world. But when we don't do that, and we don't create that kind of society, but we begin to want to have the same kind of society that other nations have, even the best ones, moral, but not holy, and we try to assimilate into their cultures, then God throws us out of Eretz Israel, and we end up living amongst them. And in order to ensure that we don't assimilate, okay, God created this distance, Sina, this distance between the Jew and the Goy. The Goy will never feel that the Jew is mamash part of him. Now, that doesn't have to lead to hatred. It could just be a distance. And the distance could be very nice. I don't know, but the Goy could look up to the Jew. We're different, right? We have our land. They can appreciate that, look up to it, or whatever. That's possible also. But it's possible because of the distance, it could lead to hatred too. When when it's necessary to keep us apart from them. That's why the Pasuk says, the Medrash says, the fact that we are a nation that's insulated from the rest of the world, apart, is a fact. We can't change that. That is our mission in this world, to be a nation that will be an example of God, God's representatives to the world. In order to do that, we have to live a specially holy life in every aspect of life. That's what the Torah is, to form and mold a holy existence. And when we do that willingly, then we remain separate from the nations of the world by choice, and then we dwell amongst the nations of the world in security. That's a pasuk we read in Vizos HaBracha on Simchas Torah. It says, Vayishkon Yisrael betach badad. The Jewish people will dwell in security apart, insulated. If we choose not to keep apart, we try to assimilate into the cultures of the nations of the world, then we're still going to be apart. That is a fact. That can't change. But then we're going to read a different pasuk on Tisha B'Av, sitting on the floor, Echa Yashva Badad. The Badad remains consistent. We're always going to be separate. The question is, are we going to do it willingly, or is it going to be forced upon us? And Reb Chaim Volozhiner says the following. The Medrash says also, we're compared to oil, and the nations of the world are compared to water. You can't mix oil and water. If the oil floats on top of the water, separated by a surface tension, then the oil protects the water and the water supports the oil. We can coexist with the nations of the world very nicely. But when you try to shake the oil into the water, what eventually happens? The water rises to the surface. It can't stay there. What pushes into the surface? The water pressure. Says Reb Chaim Volozhiner, we have two choices. Either we make Kiddush, or the Goy is going to make Havdalah. Either we sanctify ourselves and separate ourselves from the nations of the world in that way, and then we can coexist with them beautifully, or if we try to assimilate into their cultures, it's been shown throughout history, whenever we tried to assimilate, whether it was in Egypt, or it was in Spain, or it was in Germany, what happened? That's when the Goyim pushed us out. They won't let us assimilate. They don't want us. So as long as we remain insulated, separate, apart, we can coexist very nicely with them. And the Sina is just separation. When we try to assimilate, then the Goy is going to make Havdalah. He's going to push us out. And this Sina develops for various reasons. And some of those reasons could, again, end up to be positive, or it could end up to be negative. It depends on us. Depends on how much we need that separation from the side of the Goyim that we don't assimilate. How much we need them to push us away. So one aspect is jealousy. The nations of the world know that we have a Torah, that we are God's representatives. They have there are even Goyim who recognize that, fundamentalist Christians that love Jews and love Eretz Yisrael and look at us as God's chosen people. The only problem is they want to convert us to Christianity. Okay, so there's still not exactly, there's still a distance, still a separation in any case. On the other hand, what's it called? So that jealousy can lead to admiration. And the Torah says that's possible. Right? It says, our Torah, ki hi chochmaschem ubinaschem le'enei ho'amim. Our Torah is our wisdom and understanding in the eyes of the nations of the world, who will say there is no wise and understanding people like this people. So the recognition of our greatness and our specialness can lead the Goyim to admiration. But Rashi says over there's a condition. That's only if we keep the mitzvahs properly. But if we don't keep them properly, then they're going to consider us fools, and that kina will lead to sina. That jealousy will lead to hatred. So, therefore, what's it called? I was thinking, what's the idea? How does it work? As long as the non-Jewish world sees that we're something special, and they don't have any connection to that. They don't want to be holy the way we're supposed to be holy. They just want to be moral. Right? They want to live in this world. They don't want the main thing to be the next world for them like it is for us. They don't want that. So then, there's no jealousy that's negative. You're only jealous of something you think is in your domain. You could have, right? I always give the example, if you have a doctor and a shoemaker who live next to each other, and the doctor gets the state-of-the-art x-ray machine, and the shoemaker gets a state-of-the-art sewing machine, the doctor's not going to be jealous of the shoemaker's sewing machine. He doesn't need it. He doesn't sew up his patients with a sewing machine. And the shoemaker is not going to be jealous of the doctor's x-ray machine because he doesn't need an x-ray machine. He knows what's in his shoes, feet. So he doesn't need that. So something that you recognize is out of your league, you don't want, says the Ibn Ezra. You don't are not jealous. But if you think it's coming to you, it's in your league. Two doctors can be jealous of each other because one has a better x-ray machine. Two shoemakers can be jealous of each other because one has a better sewing machine. Because that's in my league. When the Goyim realize, and we do the mitzvahs properly, and we show them that this is not for you, then they can admire us from their jealousy, and the jealousy won't be negative. It'll be admiration. But when they think, well, we could do better like that too. When we act like them, when we don't keep the mitzvahs properly, then they say, well, why can't we have these? We could be the same thing. Then the jealousy is negative. Same thing it says, when you go to Eretz Yisrael, when you go to Yerushalayim 3 times a year and leave your homestead, vulnerable, no one will want your land. They won't covet your land. So God's telling us that when you leave the homestead, you go to Yerushalayim for Yomtif, Shalosh Regalim, you're leaving the homestead vulnerable. So Goyim could come and take it. I'm promising you they won't want your land. So he's bothering me. God shouldn't promise us they won't want it. Just promise me they won't take it. I don't care if they want it. Just don't take it. The idea is if we go to Yerushalayim and we learn how to be holy people and go back and live like that, then the Goyim won't want our land. They'll realize it's out of their league. This is a land for holy people. We're not holy. We don't want to be holy. But if we don't learn that lesson and we live in Eretz Yisrael the same way that they could live, same secular existence, then why shouldn't they want the land? Then they'll want it in a very negative way. And then it leads to the next thing. Once they're jealous of us, and they think that we're in the same league because we don't act properly, we try to assimilate and be like them. So they say, if you can be like us, then we want to be like you too. Then we're all the same. So then their jealousy leads to contempt and a negative jealousy. Then it also leads to the fact that they say, hey, you took what's coming to us. Right? You're Ganovin. What's coming to us, you have. It's ours. Right, that the Catholics say, or the Palestinians say, it's our land. We want the land. You took it from us. Or the Catholics, you're claiming to something that's ours. We're the chosen people, or whatever. Then it becomes very, very negative. And then, what's it called? The Goyim begin to think that not only have we taken what's theirs, we want to harm them, and we're making all kind of conspiracies against them, and take over the world, and take everything from them. And then that leads to terrible anti-Semitism. And therefore, when we begin that process by being culturally subjugated to nations of the world, we want to be like them. Not what we're supposed to be. Not with our standards, values, and lifestyle. We want their standards, values, and lifestyle. That's also called Shibud Malchios. Shibud Malchios means, in its simple form, where we are subjugated to the nations of the world. They rule over us or whatever. But it also means we're subjugated culturally. Right? Subjugated culturally means that we want what they want, not because we have a Yetzer Hara like everybody has, but it's an external thing. People have a Yetzer Hara to eat, so people can have a Yetzer Hara to eat, what's it called? They have a Yetzer, they have a drive to eat. So the Yetzer can be ra, can be bad if you want to eat the wrong things at the wrong time. Everybody has a drive, sexual drive. If you use it in the wrong way, it's bad. That's the Yetzer Hara. But everybody's born with those drives. They're natural. They're normal. They have to be guided, controlled, directed. Then they can be good. But there's certain things that are not normal drives that people are born with. For instance, no one is born with a drive and a desire to buy faded, torn blue jeans for $200. Right? It is not part of the psyche of a person. Okay? Where does it come from? Cultural subjugation. Well, Goyim want that. It's a fad. So I want it too. right? I can get it free at the Salvation Army, right? But I want to spend $200 because it has a thing that says Levi's on it or whatever. In any case, so therefore, when we begin to not realize that we're in Gaulis, that we're living amongst the nations of the world, we don't belong here. And we don't have that surface tension, that distance that has to exist, and we subjugate ourselves to them culturally, then God makes us, subjugated to them physically. That's the first stage of Gaulis. We lose our independence. You're supposed to be independent of them in order to create a holy society. If you're not, then you're not going to be independent physically either. So that is what this day, Asura B'Teves, represents. Now, all of that applies to Goyim. But the Gemara says in Psachim that Amei Ha'aretz, Jews who are Amei Ha'aretz, hate Talmidei Chachamim more than the Goyim hate Jews. And not only that, the ones that hate them most is the wives of Amei Ha'aretz. The women hate Talmidei Chachamim even more. Why? Why Amei Ha'aretz hate Talmidei Chachamim? Non-Frum Jews hate Frum Jews? And their wives, the women, hate them even more? Why? So first of all, you have to understand there are all kinds of Amei Ha'aretz. An Amei Ha'aretz can apply to somebody who doesn't keep the Torah at all, is totally ignorant of the Torah, and is non-Frum. Or an Amei Ha'aretz can be a Frum person. But he, Lo Shimesh Talmidei Chachamim, he doesn't put effort into Torah. It's just, you know, a surface kind of Frumkeit, as they call in this country, Dati light. You know, what's it called? Too religious or whatever. They don't take it that seriously. It's just, you know, nice tradition or whatever. But it's not anything that they're willing to really, they look for every leniency that can be or whatever. And Torah is really a bunch of problems. We have 613 problems we have to deal with. And that's also an Amei Ha'aretz. So an Amei Ha'aretz can be from people who are totally not Frum, and we'll see even hate Talmidei Chachamim to the case where they look to kill them and destroy them. It says that what's it called? And you can have an Amei Ha'aretz. The Tanna Dvar Yovel says, "Eilu Amei Ha'aretz sheyesh bohem derech eretz ushar mitzvos umarchikim esatzum agezel." You can have an Amei Ha'aretz who's a very fine person between man and man. They have derech eretz and other midos tovos, and they keep mitzvahs even. And they don't steal, right? And they stay away from things that are not proper. But they're still called an Amei Ha'aretz because they're not good between man and God. Those mitzvahs they're not so careful about. And we find an interesting Tosfos in Ksuvos. The Gemara says that Rabbi Akiva said in Psachim there, when I was an Amei Ha'aretz, the first 40 years of his life, he was an Amei Ha'aretz. He knew nothing. He started learning when he was 40. At 80, he became one of the greatest sages after 40 years of learning. But he started out in Amei Ha'aretz. He said, when I was in Amei Ha'aretz, I said, give me a Talmud Chacham and I'll bite him like a donkey. Right? I'll break his bones. I hated Talmidei Chachamim. Okay? So the Tosfos asks, it says that why did Rachel, the daughter of Kalba Savua, why did she want to marry this shepherd called Rabbi Akiva? What did she see in him? She saw potential that he had. He was Sanua Umali. He was a good person, and he was very, very modest and modesty. He's a modest, good person. Tosha said, what kind of modest, good person? This guy said he would want to bite and destroy Talmidei Chachamim. He hated them. So Tosha says the following. He says, not because he hated Talmidei Chachamim. He wasn't a bad person, right? But he thought that Talmidei Chachamim hate him. He said, he thought Talmidei Chachamim hate Amei Ha'aretz. And therefore, you reflect how whether you think people think of you. He thought they hated him, so Mela, he hated them, right? And he also saw that the Talmidei Chachamim don't want to touch Amei Ha'aretz. They're considered Tamei. They stay away from us. So he thought it's because they hate us. So therefore, had this negative feeling about Frum people. But not because he was bad. He was really a good person. He had good midos, and he was Sanua It's just that he thought that Talmidei Chacham didn't like him, so he didn't like them. The Ritva says, no, Rabbi Akiva was really an Amoritz. During those 40 years, he was really a negative guy. But as he started learning Torah, he became better. And she met him at that period in his life when he was starting to become better. Okay? The Ein Eliyahu says that since the Amnei Ha'aretz don't know the Halacha, they think that Talmidei Chacham are doing things wrong. For instance, they don't work for a living. They're parasites. They're too from. We know it's okay, you know, to be together with women or whatever, and we think it's wrong for them to do what they're doing. So the Amei Ha'aretz think that the Talmidei Chachamim are doing things wrong, and the Mila, they hate them because they see that they're doing all these terrible things. In their eyes, are terrible. Which may not be terrible if they knew that this was the halach. And another thing he says is that, so it says that there are kamei ha'aretz who are so filled with hatred for Talmidei Chachamim that it's a danger to the life of the Talmid Chacham. And therefore you're allowed to kill them on a Yom Kippur that fell on Shabbos to save your life. Not all of them are like that, but it can even reach to that. Even that, so says, what's it called, the Tosfos. The Marashah says, we're talking about you're allowed to embarrass them or whatever to keep them away from you because they really, really hate with a passion, right? With their whole intention is just to hurt the Talmid Chacham because they feel the Talmid Chacham hates them or they feel the Talmid Chacham is taking what's coming to them. They're a bunch of parasites. All this is not from the newspaper. This is Mefarshei HaGemara. And says Rabbi Cheskel Levenstein, this also comes from kina, from jealousy. Because they really know that the Talmud Chacham, the frum people, have a life that's meaningful or whatever, and it bothers them. So when you're jealous of somebody and you want to reach that level, that jealousy is a positive thing. That's called kina sofri. But when you don't want to reach that level, but you're jealous that somebody else has it, then you want them not to have it. Not that you want it. You don't want them to have it. Then it becomes a negative thing. And not only that, but when you're jealous of somebody because you recognize really what they are and positive, and you don't like that, that kind of jealousy leads to more hatred than when you're jealous, when you don't like somebody because you consider them nothing. Right? When you consider them nothing, the Goyim consider us, you know, who are we? Right? They don't recognize that greatness. But a Jew recognizes the greatness of what Judaism really is. They have it within them. And when they want it for themselves, it's a positive thing. When they just don't want we have it, then it's a negative thing. And that's why the women are the worst. Because the women have a greater potential to Ruchnius. Women were given a greater guarantee to Olam Haba. They're the ones who are supposed to bring out the Kiddush in their husbands and their children. And when they resist that, and they recognize that in from people, then they hate them even more because the kina is even greater. If the more you appreciate what somebody else has that you don't want, but you want, but you don't want them to have it, right, then it's greater sina. And that's why they think that the Talmud Chacham is taking from them what's coming to them, right? And they're getting all the housing and they're getting all the taksivim, right? And they're living off of us. They're parasites. They're not working, and they're sitting and learning, or whatever. All these things are become inflated in their mind and lead to even more sina. It's interesting, though, because this is and the purpose is that we should not assimilate with Amei Ha'aretz either. So there's a distance, but the distance is only caused in a negative way when we don't do what we're supposed to do properly. Because if we were doing it properly, we'd give them an example that they'd want to be. But if we give them an example they don't want to be, so they understand that we have something that they really deep down want, but they don't want to put effort into getting it, and because we're not doing it properly, it leads to hatred and mockery, and that's why it says you have to be very careful with Amei Ha'aretz, because their children are going to become Talmidei Chacham. Because why? Because they recognize it, except they resist it. The children who don't have that resistance are going to get from their parents what they recognize, what they're so much against. What are they so much against? There must be something there. And eventually, the next generation, you see from the kibbutzim or whatever, that the subsequent generations recognized from their parents that there was so hatred, so much opposition to these people. They must have something that we don't really like. They wanted to find out what it is. And that's why it says in Shir HaShirim Rabbah, sometimes the Am Haaretz mixes up and he calls love hate. Ahava, Ava. Ava, Ava sounded like. No, it's from a really feeling of love deep down for what the Talmud Chacham represents, but it turns into hatred because I resent that he has it, and I don't want to get it. So I don't want him to have it either. So from what really is a source, that could be tremendous love and kinas sofrim and a desire to want to get what they have, but if I don't have that desire, then I resent what they have and I don't want them to have it. And then it turns into terrible hatred. And that's why it says, basically, in Ovis Reb Nosson, that a person should love everybody, even Amei Haaretz, because potentially they have a tremendous potential, right? So who shouldn't you love? Apikursim, meaning people are mamish, rebelled against God. People know any better, but they resent what the Talmud, because deep down they know that that's what they should be. Those kind of people you should love, just don't like what they're doing, but realize they have tremendous potential. And realize also that maybe if we would be doing the mitzvahs properly, we would present to them what real tznius is. Not tznius that is distorted, right, because of the way that we function with it, right? Maybe there should be, you know, buses where men and women are separated, but in a way that is darchei noah, nice, not spitting in people's faces or not, which doesn't really happen a lot, but the few rotten apples make it bad for everybody. And or if we had Shabbos the way Shabbos is in, and present what a Shabbos is, not necessarily in a negative way or whatever, then maybe we would bring out the jealousy in a positive way, not in a negative way. So the connection, what I just said, to current events doesn't need any explanation. And Emir Tzashem, if we understand that, and we understand what the source of all this is, and how we can harness that tremendous negative energy that the non-frum public has, and turn it around to be positive, then Emir Tzashem will all be mashpia on them, right? And we'll see the day when all Jews have that heritage, which deep down they really want, if we present it to them in the proper way, and then Taka will be able to reveal the cates, will reveal when Mashiach is going to come, because he'll be here. That will be the revelation soon in our day.